This is Melted Snow Podcast, episode 25, featuring Connor Crowley. Connor is an economist and engineer who has an interest in technology and productivity. The purpose of this conversation is to socialize the idea of a game B fulcrum within a game A economy. I hope you enjoy. Thanks for listening. You and I have been engaging in an ongoing conversation over the last few years, reflecting on the state of what's going on, trying to make sense of it, stand back from it and just observe without judgment and just see if there's any patterns emerging. What's going on post Donald Trump, post Brexit, etc., etc. And we've come to learn that that has been given the title of Game A.
That's probably an introduction to where we are now. I suppose what I'm going to talk about to some extent predates that because it's based on an idea I had 20 years ago where essentially I saw it as philanthropy was emerging then as a big thing in the States, and philanthropists typically deliver aid directly. But I saw the possibility of a potential Achilles heel in the corporate governance and the capital market structure that could allow an alternative approach. And I kind of sat in my hands because, it seemed too radical at the time. But seeing the way Game A is closing out, it no longer seems inappropriate. And it's really very pertinent to Game B, if you like. And maybe you want to talk a little bit.
But let's assume that you and I have been accustomed to this language in recent months. So why don't we try and tease that out? So let's start with Game A, and it's a phrase or a title that's been assigned to dominant, established, truth institutions that have been in place for the last 150 years, let's say, post-industrial age, up to and including the modern era. That is administrated and facilitated by media outlets, news channels, the broadcast concept. So it's asymmetrical.
Yeah.
So the few have control over the many. But with the post-internet world we live in, information exchange has become very symmetrical and decentralized. And therefore the game that's being played is changing and has changed. So the old paradigm of Game A is in front of our eyes, is failing.
Yeah, I mean, Game A is going to come to an end. It's a question of whether we can boot up an alternative operating system to do it smoothly, or whether it happens in a catastrophic manner as has happened in the past. And I think the only thing we can be sure of is that A is going to happen, and B, the longer it takes to happen, the more severe the crisis is going to be when it occurs, because, you know, we've talked about complexity and complicated, and as things become more complicated, when they do collapse, putting them back together again will be a bigger task. Mm-hmm. So it's like a recession. They talk about economists who predict 9 of the last 3 recessions, but the thing about a recession is the longer it takes for one to happen, the more severe it tends to be when it does happen. And that's a microcosm of the collapse that's coming in the whole Game A, when it's not just economic, it's political, it's all the sources of information. When they all collapse together, putting them back together will be a big task.
Okay, in terms of people trying to divert their attention towards some alternative or some other way of doing things, Game B is a new way of organizing how we exchange value, how we conduct business, how we make sense of the world. Yeah, we're trying to add to this conversation around what
Sure.
Game B is. And you have some insights and some original ideas around some of the mechanics of how Game B can manifest.
Yeah, essentially the weakness I see in the current situation is that in a Game A paradigm, what matters is ownership. So it's not whether you control a company or not, or how much that company you own, what percentage of that company you own. Whereas in a Game B environment, if there's a collective demand and a collective need for allocation of resources, then it's not about ownership, it's about control. And the interesting thing is, while you know, need to own 100% of a business, you only need to control 51% of it to control what happens with the entire profits of that company. So if we take an example where maybe it's best to see how this could happen in practice, to do a kind of a talk through what might happen. So let's start with a savings and loan, or a what we call in Europe a mutual organization. Let's imagine then that we flood the board of an organization like that of a mutual lender. And the thing we haven't talked about is one of the technologies that could facilitate the game B is what's called the DAO stack. Now, the maturity of the DAO stack is a mute point, but the notion in the crypto world is of devolved autonomous organizations. That's what DAO stands for. So certainly there could be a crypto creation of a token that this organization would create. So let's imagine that it has, as I say, 40 billion in deposits, and it creates a token with 5 billion to invest. So we now have 5 billion to invest, and we look at a typical Game A company, which would be a utility, a highly regulated company with probably a market capitalization of 5 billion and profits of about 1/15th of that. Typically the price earnings is around 15, so it's generating profits of about 350 million. So if we take a Game A takeover in this situation, what you're going to have to do is first of all get 30% of that company. And when you declare, once you have 30% of that company, you have to declare your intention to take over the company. And to do that, you've got to make an offer to all the shareholders at the same price for all the shares. So if you've got 30%, they know you want to take it over in the Game A. The game theory is fairly straightforward, but they basically, it's a scarcity paradigm, it's a Game A model, and you're going to have to offer 30, 40, 50% premium on their shares for them to cough up and sell their shares. And typically the rule is you've got to get control of 85% before you can mandate the remaining people to sell out to own that company. So that's the kind of Game A. So that's why you can only go so far with your takeovers, because the market says a company is worth 5 billion. If you want to take control of it, it's going to cost you typically 6.5 billion or thereabouts, between 6 and 7 billion to get the control to buy out the holder's honours. If we approach this from a Game B scenario, what we're saying is we don't want to own 100% of these shares. We need to just control what happens to the profits of this company. So let's imagine we do the same thing. We take our 30% of our shares, and we then have to make an offer for the remainder of the shares. But obviously, we don't necessarily want to own 100%. So we can make a lowball offer of, say, 110% of the current price. And all we need to do is get 20% of the remaining 70% or 21% of the remaining 7% to agree to sell their shares for us to gain control of that company. You know, once we do that, we made the offer, the offer expires. Typically what happens if only 50, or let's say we have 30% and only 23% agree in a Game A situation, the company walks away or comes back with a higher offer. In our situation, we close the deal and we take 53% of this company. So we've now gained control of a 5 billion organization for something between 2.5 and 3 billion. So we've now generating profits of 350 million, which is the profits of that organization. And again, we can turn that into a token. So if we look at the 350 billion of profits, that's the ability to service about 350 million of profits. Typically, corporate debt is trading around 3.5%. So that's capable of servicing about 10 billion of debt. So obviously you wouldn't want to load the company fully with debt. So we can issue an 8 billion of debt. So we can issue an 8 billion token, or we can raise 8 billion of debt to, and we can straight away see that we started with 5 billion, we invested 3 billion. Now we've got 8 billion plus what's left of our 5 billion. So we're up to 10 billion. So all of a sudden, in the Game A, every time you take over a company, you exhaust your resources, whereas we've taken over a company and doubled our resources. So we can now go and take a company over of twice the size. So essentially, I suppose I think I described it to you as the game B fulcrum, and I took that description from Archimedes, where Archimedes said, give me a lever long enough and a fulcrum on which to place it, and I'll move the world. And the idea would be that you establish a fulcrum which, through increased leverage, can start to gain control without diminishing its resources, actually increasing its resources as it grows. If you got game B initiated, it may be, at the moment, all the philanthropists are successful game A players almost by definition, unless they inherited a ton of wealth and they're not handing it on to their descendants, but are becoming game A players, which is far more unusual. What's far more common is the main philanthropists have made it all within their own lives. And they by definition have been successful in game A. But if they started to come and play game B, you know, you could have an enormous capital. But we mentioned the DAO stack, and obviously what you would do is not, because what I described is an organization that's getting bigger and bigger and bigger, but you would have to devolve control of that capital through DAO organizations. So when you create your cryptocurrency, the notion of a cryptocurrency is basically a contract, an enforceable contract by crypto. And so you can design the currency to only allow it to control so much capital, so as that as the company grows, you start to initiate new DAOs, each with resources at their disposal. So the collective DAOs control how the capital grows. But there's no getting away from it. And that's why I say that this is a need for some political agitation or political activity at the start.
Okay. I think for me, one of the challenges, I would say, is the scaling of this. And that my understanding of how collective organizations operate is that there is a peer-to-peer self-regulatory nature, in that the Dunbar number of 150.
Yeah, and I think you would use the Dunbar number when structuring the DAO stack. So basically you can create a token that limits itself. Like, for example, bitcoins, there can never be more than 23 million bitcoins. So, you know, short of someone coming up with a quantum computer and reverse engineering that, that's not going to change. So we can confidently say there will never be more than, bitcoins are scarce. And you can create any token that any token will not exceed a certain number in valuation, and then it will spawn a secondary token, which in turn, so in other words, you can have DAO stacks which, if you like, I mean, you know, to use the analogy, you're putting a game B virus in the game A activity, because every time the game B DAO grows to a certain size, which you determine, it will spawn a new token and a new DAO stack. So rather than having, you know, 100 billion controlled by one person, you might have 100 DAO stacks, each controlling a billion of capital. And each of those DAO stacks may only have, you know, the Dunbar number of participants.
Is there any other elements of this that you want to enter into the conversation for the moment, or do you want to park it there? Do you think you've communicated your core message?
No, I think that's essentially, I think it's really a question of summarizing that. If you separate control from ownership, capitalism has an Achilles heel, and can that be exploited to create a game B organization that will grow through different DAOs into a game B platform? I mean, at the most radical level, there being room for lack of property ownership, which anytime anyone's tried to achieve that in the past, has ended up in the gulag or Venezuela or somewhere like that. But if that's going to happen, what's going to have to happen first is that the lack of scarcity has to be, or rather the scarcity has to be addressed. And you know, scarcity is just a byproduct of an economic system that demands scarcity. Every equilibrium in economics is an equilibrium between supply and demand. So if something becomes free, it's seen as a market failure. So the first thing we need to do is create an economic engine that will eliminate the scarcity. And once we eliminate the scarcity, we can see, you know, what we do need money for and what we don't. Personally, I don't ever see a non-monetary economy, because some things will always be scarce, whether it's a football match or something, but there'll always be some level of scarcity. And I think money is a way of signaling the allocation of resources. But you know, the idea of certain things not needing to be scarce is definitely needs to be achieved first.
Okay.
Unless we want to go back to the gulag.
Who do you expect will resonate with this message?
You know, to use a Boris Johnson expression, 6 weeks before Brexit, it's only a germ of an idea. But it's really to expose that to the collective consciousness and see, you know, whether people say, no, the fiduciary element of that is such that it'll never fly, or this is interesting, how can we structure a DAO stack and commensurate tokens to do it. And it, you know, I've described it at scale, but it could be done at a smaller scale. I mean, you know, down at the lower level, we've credit unions in Ireland where, you know, they're very small credit institutions with assets of a few millions rather than billions. I described it at scale, but it could be done at a smaller scale.
So if anyone's listening to this and they feel they can expand on the conversation, or that the content of what you're speaking about resonates with them, please reach out to us.
Absolutely.
Myself. And we may pick this up in another conversation. So for now, we'll say goodbye and thank you.
Yeah, thank you.